This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. Coming up on a special edition of Africa News Tonight.
So we went out to reveal how these first African slaves, along with many who followed and their descendants, shaped the course of the United States.
That's VOA journalist Chris Simpkins as we look on the origins of the African slave trade in the United States and its long-term implications for the nation. So stay with us. There's lots more ahead on this special pre-recorded edition of Africa News Tonight. Today, Africa News Tonight is looking at the legacy of slavery in the United States of America. This year marks the 400th anniversary of the arrival of the first African slaves on the shores of what would become the United States, a moment described by poet Langston Hughes as the rock on which freedom stumped its toe. VOA's Richard Green has a closer look at the beginnings of what has been called America's original sin.
In late August 1619, an English pirate ship named the White Lion sailed into the mouth of the Chesapeake Bay and anchored at what was then known as Point Comfort in colonial Virginia. According to handwritten records, the ship's cargo included some 20 and odd Africans seized from a Portuguese slave ship headed to what is now Mexico. When the captives from Angola disembarked from the White Lion, it marked the beginning of 200 years of slavery in English-speaking America. Calvin Peterson, the head of the local history group Project 1619, calls the landing site near the city of Hampton, now known as Fort Monroe, as ground zero of the African imprint on America.
The first Africans who were brought here were destined for a life of servitude. They had to work the plantations from sun up to sunset, the tobacco fields, the corn fields. They had to work these fields with no hope of ever being free.
The captives of the White Lion were sold or traded to wealthy white plantation owners in Hampton and the Jamestown settlement, which became the Virginia colony. A few days after the White Lion landed in Virginia, another ship, the Treasurer, arrived carrying a few more slaves, including one named Angela. Historian James Horn heads the Jamestown Rediscovery Project, an archaeology project in the Jamestown settlement where Angela spent part of her first years in bondage.
With Angela, we can tell the much broader story of slavery and the beginnings of slavery in our country and racism, which really went hand in hand with slavery, and at the same time give Angela, through our imagination, some sense of identity, some sense of dignity.
Eventually, an estimated 12.5 million Africans will be put onto ships bound for the Americas and Caribbean between 1525 and 1866, according to Emory University's Transatlantic Slave Trade Database. Out of that number, nearly 11 million men, women, and children survived the Middle Passage, the treacherous voyage across the Atlantic, chained and crowded below decks with little water and food. Though most slaves from the African continent were taken from Ghana and Senegal, more than 5 million who landed in the Western Hemisphere came from Angola, which had been colonized by the Portuguese, who dominated the slave trade for centuries. Angola accounted for roughly a quarter of the 400,000 Africans sent to the North American mainland. Richard Green, VOA News, Washington.
For much of this year, VOA journalists were reporting our special project, 1619 Africa to America, The Odyssey of Slavery. You can take a look at more of their work at voanews.com/africa-america. Next, we look at the economics of the slave trade in North America. In 1807, more than 190 years after the first captives from the African continent landed on the shores of what would become the United States, lawmakers abolished the international slave trade. By that time, slavery had evolved into a multi-billion dollar institution in the young nation and made millionaires out of those who both owned slaves and sold them. We have Richard Green again to explain how slavery transformed the early years of America.
As the first English-speaking settlements in North America grew into the original 13 American colonies, the African slave trade grew along with it and became the backbone of the American economy. Slaves came to the Americas as part of the triangle trade. The first link of the triangle began in Europe, as ships carried manufactured goods such as cloth and guns to Africa, which were used in exchange for captives picked up at ports in West Africa. Those captives would then be transported in bondage to the Americas and Caribbean on the treacherous voyage across the Atlantic Ocean known as the Middle Passage. These people were then forced into the back-breaking work of growing raw materials like sugar, rice, cotton, and tobacco that were shipped back to Europe on the third leg of the triangle. In those first decades, enslaved Africans had no official status, either as indentured servants or slaves, until Massachusetts became the first to legalize slavery in 1641. Although slavery was concentrated heavily among the plantations of the southern United States, it was also prevalent in the North, long before its reputation as a haven for free blacks and the anti-slavery movement. Historian James DeWolfe Perry is the great-grandson of James DeWolfe, one of many northern businessmen who grew wealthy from the slave trade during America's formative years.
All of this was tremendously important in building the economy of the North and what became the United States. In the colonial era, the slave trade and the provisioning trade to slave plantations in the West Indies were a key part of what allowed the British colonies to prosper and eventually to rebel against Great Britain and become an independent nation.
James DeWolfe lived in Rhode Island. He invested heavily in slave ships, in banks and insurance that did business with slaveholders, and in northern textile mills that turned the cotton grown by slave labor into garments, fueling America's Industrial Revolution. By the time of his death in 1837, James DeWolfe was one of the wealthiest men in America. Even faith groups were involved in the slave trade, as Reverend Nicholas Nicely, the bishop of the Episcopal Diocese of Rhode Island, explains.
The church, particularly in Rhode Island, profited directly from the slave trade. But in a more direct way, we owned slaves. We had clergy who owned slaves. We had slaves that were owned by the missionary organizations that were creating the Anglican churches here in the United States.
The role that religion played in the African slave trade began at the point of capture. While awaiting slave ships in Angola, Africans were forced by their Portuguese handlers to convert to Catholicism. Baptisms, conducted in big groups, stripped the captives of their African identity. Those who were detained in Angola would be given Christian names. Those herded onto ships would often be renamed if and when they reached a distant shore. In 1985, Pope John Paul II asked Africans to forgive white Christians for their involvement in the slave trade. Richard Green, VOA News, Washington.
In 1865, nearly 250 years after the first enslaved Africans arrived in the Americas aboard the English pirate ship White Lion, the institution of slavery in the United States ended with the close of the Civil War. But from the ashes of slavery emerged extreme prejudice and animosity towards the former slaves, which has grown entrenched. VOA's Richard Green discusses the growing demand for the federal government to compensate African Americans for the centuries of slavery and inequity.
The idea of reparations for the nearly 4 million former slaves first emerged in 1865, in the closing days of the U.S. Civil War. Union General William T. Sherman issued an order granting freed slaves a plot of not more than 40 acres of tillable ground on land seized from the southern Confederate states of South Carolina and Florida. From that order came the phrase 40 acres and a mule, which has evolved into a code phrase among African Americans about the unfulfilled promise of full equality and fairness. Nearly 150 years later, in a landmark 2014 essay in the Atlantic magazine, writer Ta-Nehisi Coates offered a detailed case why African Americans should receive compensation for the institutional racism that emerged from the legacy of slavery. The lingering effects include mass incarceration, unequal access to home ownership and education, and a huge economic divide compared with white Americans. But many people oppose reparations, including Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, who say white Americans of today should not be held responsible for the country's past sins. Professor Robert Trent Vinson, a scholar of African history at William & Mary College, rejects that view.
And when we talk about slavery, we can't talk about it just as an evil. That's one thing. But we also have to talk about it as theft, the theft of people's labor. In the largest slave society in world history, 4 million people by 1860, the theft of that labor for 246 years for the benefit of others, even for those who did not directly own enslaved people.
Vincent was among a group of academics who participated in a VOA town hall at Norfolk State University, a historically black college in Virginia, to commemorate the 400th anniversary of the arrival of the first enslaved Africans in the Americas. Cassandra Newby Alexander is the dean of the liberal arts college at Norfolk State. She said reparations are needed because of the racial discrimination that was codified into the nation's laws from its very first days under British colonial rule.
So reparations doesn't just mean give somebody money. Reparations has to do with an overhaul to right a wrong. So we talk about equality, but we don't talk about equity.
Amy Glock, a professor of Africana Studies at California State University, echoed the idea that reparations means more than just a monetary settlement.
An overhaul of the white supremacist and racist structures that we have today because of enslavement.
Gloria Brown Marshall, a constitutional law professor at John Jay College in New York, gave a few examples of the modern-day instruments of racism.
Stopping the legal rape of black people through fines, through imprisonment, through the prison-industrial complex.
Advocates say modern reparations should advance legal and social reforms that create a more just society and economy. As writer Ta-Nehisi Coates put it, a national reckoning that will lead to spiritual renewal for all Americans. Richard Green, VOA News, Washington.
For more on VOA's Africa to America project, please go to voanews.com/Africa-America. For most of this year, VOA journalist Chris Simpkins was reporting the stories for VOA's special project, Africa to America, The Odyssey of Slavery. He joins us now to talk about the project and what he learned as he reported the story of the slave trade.
This project was a collaboration between Voice of America's English News Division and the Africa Division, and we spent 6 months on the project. And the goal of this 1619 project was to give our listeners and viewers an opportunity to learn about the history that wasn't readily available or told or published. So we went out to reveal how these first African slaves, along with many who followed and their descendants, shaped the course of the United States. And we were able to go back to the place where this history took place, where the first African enslaved people arrived in what was then colonial Virginia in the year 1619. And they arrived in what is now Hampton, Virginia, just about 3 hours south of Washington, D.C., along the Chesapeake Bay. And this ship arrived from Angola in late August of 1619. And we were able to tell this story and talk to some of the people who've studied this history for many, many, many years. And we were able to tell our viewers and listeners a complete history of how this happened, where they came from, some of the impacts that they made, and how basically they helped shape and build the United States of America and help the colonial people who immigrated to colonial Virginia from places like England and Scotland. And these enslaved people came over and really saved the colonists' lives by bringing skills that they did not have, which helped them to prosper the colonies. It also helped them to make quite a bit of money. So it was important to bring this history to our viewers.
And Chris, this is a very emotional story. What have you learned as you reported the story of the slave trade?
Well, it was a very emotional story. It was a very eye-opening story for me because growing up in the segregated South in North Carolina, I never learned about this history in school textbooks. So it was interesting to dive into this story now that I'm much older and discover basically I knew not a very lot about this history. What I did learn was about the first arrival of the enslaved people, but I think what struck me the most was that I was always taught that the enslaved people from places like Angola and Ghana were brought here on slave ships, and they had no skills at all. And everything that they learned was taught to them by their white masters. There's nothing that could be further from the truth than that. The people that came over here and were brought against their will from places, like I said, Angola and Ghana, came here with a tremendous amount of skills. They came here with carpentry skills, architectural skills. Some of them had political skills. It wasn't just a blank slate. They came here with agricultural skills that they were able to teach the white colonists how to grow better crops, how to grow tobacco, corn, rice. And these were things that the colonists were able to take advantage of because they were getting free slave labor, and they prospered from this. So that was one of the most interesting things for me to discover in the course of my reporting.
That was VOA journalist Chris Simpkins talking about VOA's special project on slavery. To take a look at Chris's television reports, please go to www.voanews.com/Africa-America. Slavery was abolished in the United States in 1865. It remained legal in a number of countries until into the early parts of the 20th century before it was essentially outlawed worldwide. But as Terry Fitzpatrick, the communications director for the organization Free the Slaves, tells us, slavery isn't gone. For a look at the modern-day slave trade, VOA's Kate Pound Dawson spoke with Terry, who starts by detailing just what constitutes slavery in the 21st century.
Well, sure, the images of the slave ships and the auction blocks is not the way slavery actually happens in the world today. It's now more about migration, unsafe migration, and people falling into debt and having to work that off in conditions of slavery. And it in general, just in there are all sorts of legal definitions, and it changes by country and by treaty, but generally think of it this way. People who are forced to work without pay or compensation, except just being kept alive to work the next day, under conditions of force and violence, force, fraud, and coercion, and they cannot walk away. And that is a kind of a general lay definition of what modern slavery is.
Well, how does the slave trade work now? You mentioned the slave ships and the auction blocks. That doesn't happen. How does this trafficking and trade function?
Sure. The jumbo jet is the new slave ship of the modern era. So about 20% of the 40 million people who are in modern forms of slavery today are outside their country of origin, outside their home. And there are millions and millions of people moving internally in countries from rural areas to mega cities, but also from poorer countries to wealthier countries in search of a better life or in search of opportunities to send remittances home to support the family. And it's a largely unregulated business, the recruitment of foreign laborers. And so traffickers pose as legitimate labor recruiters. And once they get you away from your home, your family, your country's legal system, your language, and then they take your documents when you get to the place where you've arrived, and they say, oh, you owe us lots of money for the transport to get you here, and we will hurt someone in your family back home if you dare make trouble here. That's how people kind of fall into migration-related slavery today. The other form is debt bondage. Something goes wrong and people need to borrow money from anyone who will give it to them on any terms because you've got to fix some other problem right now. And then you agree to work it off, so to speak, and under conditions of slavery.
Now, where is it most prevalent?
80% of people are enslaved in their home country. And the highest number is in the Asia-Pacific region, largely because of India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, and Nepal. And that's about 25 million people. Second is Africa. Africa has a higher prevalence rate, meaning the percentage of the population who are in conditions of modern slavery. But in terms of the total number of people, it's about 9 million people inside Africa today who are working in conditions of slavery. And we must think of it, many people today think of this as, say, this is prostitution or brothels. It's actually not. That's a smaller percentage of the problem than one might think by watching television or seeing movies. Most of modern slavery is in mines and rubber plantations, palm oil plantations, fishing fleets, working underground in mines, working in cocoa farming and agriculture, working in timber clearing operations and in agriculture. There's a lot in domestic servitude, people enslaved as maids and domestic servants in homes. So it's a different range than one might think. But that's where it's the biggest problem, the epicenter in India and Asia Pacific and Africa, not far behind.
That was Terry Fitzpatrick with Free the Slaves, speaking with my colleague, Kate Pound-Dawson. Terry also said that everyone can help fight slavery. One way to help, he said, is check to make sure the smartphone you use, the T-shirt you wear, the food you buy are produced by companies that comply with anti-trafficking and fair labor laws. And that wraps up this special edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. And for more on our look at the legacy of slavery in the United States, please go to voanews.com/africa-america. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Rob McLean, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Always glad to have our listeners throughout Africa tuning in to our newscasts covering African news. Tune in on top of each hour, 24/7. VOA is your trusted source of news and information.